This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
All right, the coffee mug has been refilled. We're ready for the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Friday morning, January 31st, 2025. Luke Mathers is in for Greg Bach. Brittany Merlot is in for Brittany Merlot on this Friday morning. As we get things started, coming up in just a few minutes, we'll talk a bit about Act 10, the lawsuit challenging it, and why two Supreme Court justices who may come at the case from different points of view may not be a part of the case by the time all is said and done. We'll talk a bit more about that. Also, a refresher on what it was that Donald Trump said when he first nominated Sean Duffy to be Secretary of Transportation. And if you thought it was a little awkward back in November when he said these things, it certainly makes more sense now after you hear the frankly disgusting things that Donald Trump had to say yesterday after that airline crash. And we'll have our weekly panel with former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel, journalist Mark Jacob, and Jennifer Schulze. We'll talk a little sports with Dan Schumacher as well before all is said and done on this Friday morning. But Brittany Merlot is here to tell us that, again, we get the ups and downs both of precipitation and temperatures over the next few days. Brittany, good morning. Did you enjoy the warmth? Is warmth the right word? Yeah. Did you enjoy the warmth yesterday?
I would say warm is definitely the word. It felt like spring. Oh, my gosh. I had the windows open in every
single windows
room.
Open.
Every room. I've never done that before in Wisconsin. Wow. In January. It was crazy. Felt good, though. Okay. How about you? What'd you guys do?
I love the sunshine. I'm not allowed outside very often. I just am kind of a homebound creature. And every so often, Sherry pushes me outside and says, go outside and play. You can't be in here all day long. Aww. So I didn't get that chance yesterday. But I'm going to take your word for it, that it was really nice.
I love that you act like it's somebody else's fault other than your own. You're like, I'm not allowed to go outside.
Totally
you're like,
my own.
Yeah, I was just saying, it's your own doing.
Oh, no, this is me, you know, doing my violin lessons while all the other kids get to play out on the playground. And it's self-imposed, and I readily admit it. So, Brittany, if I were to go outside today and over the weekend, what would I expect?
Well, a little different, unfortunately. We're in the single digits far north. The coldest temperature across the state is 3 degrees right now into Eagle River, and then 41 degrees far south down into Kenosha and Racine. So a huge temperature spread, and that's kind of going to be with our highs today, too. We are looking at the low 30s, possibly below freezing far north, mid-30s throughout central parts of the state to low 40s down by the state line and in towards Illinois. Now, there is some rain moving through northern Illinois right now, so some light mist, scattered sprinkles are possible far south. Otherwise, today it'll be partly sunny and really kind of mild still. If you think about it, low 30s to low 40s, that's still well above average. Now, I know it's not like yesterday. That was 30 degrees above average. We were shattering records by 5 to 10 degrees. Not just tying them or coming close or by a degree or two, like blowing them out of the water. I mean, Bosco Bell hit 60 degrees yesterday.
What?
So a huge, yeah, in January, it's just
in
crazy.
January.
But
wow.
We've got the winter weather back right after this. By tomorrow, we have a low pressure system moving through. We're going to see some snow moving into the northern parts of the state, probably in the evening hours after 5, and becoming widespread between 9 and midnight. So that'll go through the overnight. You'll be waking up in the north woods to about 2 to 4 inches of snowfall. And then down south, really, honestly, just a trace to a half an inch. Not looking at much. But we warm right back up. So tomorrow we'll be into those mid-20s till mid-30s. And then Sunday, 40 to 50 degrees again. Sorry, it's hard to even just say this in January.
It is,
40
yes.
to 50 on Sunday.
That's amazing. Do you know how I can tell maybe I've been in broadcasting a bit too long or maybe what? Just the right amount of time? And maybe, I don't know, maybe Luke will back me up on this. But at one point you said about the change in the weather. You said about the temperatures, you know, we'll be back right after this into the cold weather. And I just heard back right after this. And I just for a split second was like, what? Am I supposed to hit a button someplace? Go to a commercial break? You were just dropping in there. You know, be back to the cold temperatures right after this. But I hear right after this, and I am just like, what? 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 Almost spit my coffee out over here. But yeah, this is the business.
We're keeping Pat on his toes this morning. Thank you, Brittany.
Yes, exactly. See, I don't need the coffee now. That was just like, what? I'm here. Brittany, thank you. Have a great weekend.
You too.
All right. It is exactly 7:11 right now. The Milwaukee Bucks are in San Antonio tonight for a game. Then they will play Sunday. They're in San Antonio tonight. They're home Sunday against Memphis. Yes, that's how he meant to say it. The 17th-ranked Badger men's basketball team is at Northwestern tomorrow afternoon, and you can hear that game on several Civic Media stations in Racine, Kenosha, Richland Center, Wisconsin Rapids, and Amory, and on the Civic Media app. Head over to civicmedia.us to learn more. Meanwhile, on our Wisconsin Rapids station, WFHR, you can hear Badger men's hockey. 6:30 tonight, 4:30 tomorrow, as the Badgers are in the Twin Cities to take on the Gophers. The 9th-ranked Marquette men's basketball team is home to host 25th-ranked Cincinnati tomorrow night. The top-ranked Badger women's hockey team is at Minnesota Duluth this evening and tomorrow afternoon. And that catches you up on some of the sports that you can hear on Civic Media and elsewhere as we head into the weekend here. I wanted to take just a second to talk about Act 10. That, of course, is the landmark law that Republicans passed for then-Governor Scott Walker in 2011, removing collective bargaining rights, by and large, for public sector workers. It has faced legal challenges before, but it faced those legal challenges to a Supreme Court that was made up of most assuredly conservative justices who had their own unique interpretation of applying the law. Now that the Supreme Court is progressive-controlled, there has been another legal challenge to Act 10. The state Supreme Court, its progressive majority, has decided that it will take the case directly rather than having it go through the trial courts and the appeals courts. They will take it up for interpretation right away. But that does leave a bit of a quandary for two members of the Supreme Court. That would be conservative Justice Brian Hagedorn, and then there would be progressive Justice Janet Protasiewicz. Justice Protasiewicz has made comments about Act 10 and talking about, you know, how she agreed with a dissenting view of the case that Act 10 is unconstitutional. Justice Hagedorn, meanwhile, provided legal counsel for the drafting of Act 10. When he served as Scott Walker's chief legal counsel. Hagedorn has now said he will recuse himself from the lawsuit, saying yesterday, after reviewing the filings and the various ethical rules I am sworn to uphold, I have concluded the law requires me to recuse from this case. Janet Protasiewicz declined to participate in the recent order about Republican legislative leaders wanting to intervene in the case. And Protasiewicz has said in the past that she would consider recusing from a potential Act 10 challenge. So if she had recused herself and conservative Justice Hagedorn did not, you might have had a 3-3 deadlock on the court in terms of the legal challenge. But if both Hagedorn and Protasiewicz recuse themselves, then you still have the same balance in the court of 3 progressives to 2 conservatives. That's not necessarily to say how this particular case would go, but it is, I think some people will find it refreshing to know that justices on both sides of an issue would say that upon further review, maybe I shouldn't be part of that case. That was, if I recall correctly, part of the blemish on Dan Kelly's record was at one point saying he was going to recuse himself from a case and then putting himself back on it. This was about the time that they were working on lame duck laws before Tony Evers took office. And it was a real black mark on the Supreme Court's reputation at the time, political motivation in whether to recuse yourself from a case. So, again, I would tip my cap to Justices Hagedorn and Protasiewicz if they both decide that this is the way to go. And then I want to remind folks, again, not just of what President Trump had to say yesterday in the wake of the tragedy in Washington, D.C. And we'll talk more about that with our panel in just a moment. the reprehensible comments that, you know, blame DEI as somehow playing a role in the crash when there's no evidence of that whatsoever. I bring it up now ahead of time just to take you back, and where I really, I had that moment back in November where I felt like such an outlier. I'm like, is it me? Why am I the only one noticing something that Donald Trump said on the day that he nominated Sean Duffy to be transportation secretary? A lot of media outlets quoted Trump's statement that praised Duffy, saying he was a tremendous and well-liked public servant, a respected voice and communicator during his time in Congress. But then he went on to say this: he will prioritize excellence, competence, competitiveness, and beauty when rebuilding America's highways, tunnels, bridges, and airports. He will ensure our ports and dams serve our economy without compromising our national security, and he will make our skies safe again by eliminating DEI for pilots and air traffic controllers. And you might recall, I went a little wild at this remark and could not believe more people didn't right away have a headline that said, President-elect makes wildly racist charge that our skies are not safe because of black or female or disabled pilots or air traffic controllers. At that point, I was like, why isn't the media asking Donald Trump to provide one, just one example of how having diversity in the hiring ranks made the skies less safe? And I felt a little odd having basically at Up North News the only headline that I could see out there that said Trump implies America's skies are not safe because of women and minorities in air traffic control towers and cockpits. But it's what he said. And so I'm just reminding you of that now because it makes perfect sense if you remember that from November. A lot of people were shocked by his words from the podium yesterday, where he savaged Pete Buttigieg and former President Biden and then went on a DEI rant. And the whole thing was just so unseemly. A president is not supposed to be, as has been called here, the spectator in chief, where he sees things and comments on them like he's watching a football game. When he isn't in the huddle, he doesn't actually know what happened on that play and why it was broken up, but he's going to speculate anyway. I can listen to sports talk radio all day and get that. I don't want that after a national tragedy involving airline crashes or things like that. But that's exactly what he did. And in doing so, went on what can only charitably be called a racist rant. There's no other reason. If you don't have evidence that race was a factor in this, then why would you even bring it up unless that was something right in your DNA? We'll continue this conversation and more about this week with James Santel, Mark Jacob, and Jennifer Schulze coming up next. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this Friday morning, when you're here, you're up north. I'm Pat Kreitlau.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
You know, the bumper music, it usually flows easily. It's somebody's birthday or an album was released on this day or something like that. No, this is National Hot Chocolate Day. And I had nothing else besides the 1970s group Hot Chocolate with this. So, Luke, don't shake your head at me like that. I mean, you didn't have anything better for Hot Chocolate. Look at how he runs away from the live stream right away. He's leaving me out on a limb all alone on this. Thank goodness I have a Week in Review panel to change gears with very quickly. Journalists Mark Jacob and Jennifer Schulze and former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel. How are y'all?
Good.
Good to go.
Here we are, another week down. It's funny how the first half of this month just seemed to fly by, and then the second half of the month, for some reason, just seemed to drag. I can't quite put my finger on it. But let me start my questioning to former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel about what President Trump tried to do back on Monday, Tuesday, early Wednesday, this whole notion of unilaterally being able to put a pause on a wide swath of federal spending, things that weren't going directly to individuals like Social Security checks, but anything that was like a grant or a loan or went through another group, which, as we all came to appreciate, is a lot that gets done. But let's start with the legal aspect of it first. He pulled back after 24 hours, Jim. Is it because you think he got bad advice that nobody happened to mention to him? The law that was passed in the wake of Richard Nixon that you can't do the thing that you're going to do, that you're talking about doing?
Right. The anti-impoundment statute. Oh, by the way, this thing called the Constitution of the United States of America, which also provides checks and balances. And this is why this is so problematic. This is why federal judges out there are saying the executive branch, the president, cannot do these things, both on birthright citizenship, now also on these kinds of unilateral decisions that change legislation. Goes back to the Constitution. Who initiates budgets? Who initiates financial things? It's in the House of Representatives, goes to the Senate. And the United States Congress puts together a budget. They appropriate, they allocate funds, different meanings for those two things. The president goes on, probably most often signs those budgets, and it becomes the law of the land. And that's the point, just like any other legislation would. I'd also invoke the language of the Constitution, again, Article 2, Section 3, that talks about how our president is obliged. He took an oath of office to take care that the laws of our nation be faithfully executed. That's James Madison stuff. And when you unilaterally decide that you're going to take up a pen and decide that the laws of the United States are no longer to be followed, and I've decided that, in fact, it should be something else, you're in violation of the Constitution. It's just that simple. Add one more footnote, which is some of these judges are also asking, Pat, precisely the question that you've asked, which is, is anybody in the West Wing, is anybody in the White House standing around the president saying, Mr. President, you can't do this. Let's take a look at the Constitution. Do we have any decent, thoughtful lawyers beyond the first year of law school who know about this? Apparently, no. The answer is not so much.
No. We've all got the answer for you there, Mark. Mark, tell us from your standpoint the coverage of it. Now, obviously, the first few hours of it were confusing because we're like, wait, he's doing what? Can he do that? How would you characterize what followed in terms of responsibly outlining either both the legality of the proposed move, but also the impact on people, that this wasn't just some 30,000 foot constitutional, you know, conversation. This was about real impact.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, everyone started panicking with good reason. I mean, you know, some of these, you know, Meals on Wheels might have to stop. I mean, you know, getting old people fed food might be a problem. And the Medicaid portal was down, and the new press secretary, Caroline Leavitt, held her first press briefing, and she could not even tell people whether Medicaid was affected. I mean, it was just stunning how reckless this whole thing was rolled out. And I know the media asked the questions, you know, they didn't get, you know, too many answers, but the really important takeaway for me is that there was blowback. There were people screaming, there were people upset, there was a lawsuit filed, and there was, you know, the judges acted. And when you have a reckless executive branch that is not going to respect anybody's rights or the balance of power in American democracy, then blowback is really important and people need to scream loudly.
Am I being, Jennifer, a little too rose-colored glasses on this, or was this particular exercise actually a good bit of civic engagement where people suddenly understood, oh, when we talk about federal spending, it's not just it goes to the Pentagon or it goes to this. It goes to all of these things right in my community that impact me and my neighbors. Is that wishful thinking on my part that we kind of got a good kind of civics education out of the chaos?
I agree with you. And I also think that Trump in general has been a wake-up call for how much we do not know about how our government works and what our government does and things that we take for granted. I mean, from top to bottom, he's ripping apart systems that have been in place that I'm quite confident that most people in America have never really given a thought to. And so in that regard, yes, it's good news that that you might actually have to think about where's the pipeline, where's that money for Meals on Wheels coming from? Where's that money for cancer research coming from? How does that work if it forces at least some of us to start thinking about that and the implications of that? I think that that is a good thing. Big picture, it's horrifying.
But it does, it gets to a point that you were making last week, is that unlike Trump's first term, and again, here's the caveat, there's still a lot of progress to be made, but that some news outlets seem to be doing a better job of looking for accountability, looking for the signal, not just the noise.
I agree. And I think we've seen that again this week. Part of the problem is the fire hose of activity from Trump. And frankly, we don't have enough news media to cover it. And so things are coming out in blibs and blobs. Like, there's an independent journalist, I think her name is Maria Cabas. I'm not quite sure I'm getting her name right. She broke the story all on her own about the first OPM memo coming out about the freeze, not the Washington Post, not the New York Times. She did.
Mm-hmm. And that's, we'll talk a bit more about, finding those good media sources when we continue with our panel coming up next. This is Up North News Radio, live from Chippewa Falls on the Civic Media Radio Network. Back in a bit.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
Justin Timberlake has a birthday today, turns 44 years old. Mary, thank you for the comment on YouTube. I am sharing your broadcast with friends and family that need to hear your show. Thank you for being here in this time of great need. Happy Friday. Thank you for that, Mary. With perhaps a conflicting view is a text from Len in Madison that says, retired, listening at home on the old radio, wish it had remote control for volume on off and changing station. I'm hoping he just meant that about wanting to adjust the volume and not about changing the station. But Len, if you're there, we appreciate you listening anyway. Continuing on with our Friday panel here, former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel, journalist Mark Jacob and Jennifer Schulze. And Mark, I'm going to start with you because of the news that CBS and through it Paramount is looking to settle a lawsuit. Trump sued them over a 60 Minutes piece. And much like ABC settled a suit brought by Trump with that they probably really didn't have to settle. And the same goes for Meta, Facebook. Now CBS is doing it. Is this legalized bribery out of Trump? I sue you and then you give me money?
I view it more of as a protection racket.
You know, yes.
You know, real, nice network you got there. It'd be a shame if something bad happened to it. And so then he sues and then they settle. And then they get what they want. In the case of CBS, you've got Paramount, which is the parent company that owns CBS. They're trying to do a merger with something called Skydance Media, and it requires federal approval. The Trump people have made it clear that they want to hold that up because they're mad at CBS. And so the Trump people sue CBS over how they edited a Kamala Harris interview on 60 Minutes. Ridiculous. I mean, everyone who deals with that kind of law says that this is a stupid suit, that there's no way that Trump would win. But Redstone, head of Paramount, she may be settling just to get her merger done. So yeah. you end up having this, it's a protection racket. And yeah. it's, and it, and it's, it, it, it is, if she does this, it will be, you know, completely just putting a shiv in the ribs of 60 Minutes, of a one of the most vaunted shows in journalism history. She will be killing its credibility and disabling it.
And it's got journalists outraged there and everywhere. Jennifer, just really quickly behind the scenes on this, just so we tell people the mechanics of it. What they did, what CBS did was they asked a question of Kamala Harris, and she gave kind of a longer answer. The promo shows the question and part of the answer, but the actual piece shows the question and a different part of the answer, but it's all the same answer to the same question. Trump claims it's deceptive. It's been standard practice as far as I know, but maybe you have reason to find fault with it?
No, not at all. That's totally normal broadcasting practice. You know, a promo is a certain length, and you pick something that fits within that time frame. Your piece, the that airs within the 60 Minutes show, is a different length, and you pick a soundbite that fits with that and goes with whatever the reporter is writing. The idea that he's alleging election interference because of editing of a couple of words is so ludicrous on its face. I can't believe it. It hasn't been thrown out of court, let alone that CBS is willing to pay him, or at least appears to be willing to pay him, a $25 million bribe. I don't even know what you do with that if you're a journalist at 60 Minutes or CBS. I think I don't know how you keep working there. But no. Then I don't know what, okay, if you don't work there, what you do.
But we said that about the LA Times, too, right, after that publisher, right, you know, rolled over as well. Jim Santel, do you have a different point of view that there's something in any of these cases that would lead you to recommend settling such a suit?
There's absolutely nothing. And my colleagues here on our panel got it just right. There is a case, we all know it well. It's called New York Times versus Sullivan. It's an extraordinarily high standard for good reasons. Supreme Court has said that you basically have to just show intent and malice in doing something. Got to get the facts wrong. There's got to be some damage to reputation. All these kinds of things come in play. The editing of an interview comes nowhere near that. And I'm stunned not only that Paramount and CBS are doing this, but that the larger journalism community out there, as I guess we're talking this morning, is not rising up and saying, what a terrible precedent to set. If this is the kind of case legally that the lawyers either are recommending or maybe not recommending to be settled, what is next? What is next? And again, under established law, this should go nowhere. This, to Jennifer's good point, this should have gone off on what's called summary judgment or even a motion to dismiss on the pleadings, that there is no case here. What is going on here? And I think the frustration that you're hearing this morning is very, very well articulated.
Yeah, hey, and Pat, this is what would have a chilling effect on other newsrooms too. Lawyers at every news organization would be telling their journalists, "No, you can't write that. We might get sued." And so it's not just CBS and Paramount that would be affected. It would affect everyone.
The funny thing is, well, not that the funny thing, but the thing that shows the times that we live in is that these established newsrooms that have been run credibly for decades and have certain standards and practices and attorneys and everything, they're the ones getting hit so hard right now for trying to hold Donald Trump accountable. Meanwhile, Jennifer, there are these smaller outlets that, again, you can play favorites with. We heard in the White House press conference, they're going to bring in some, you know, content creators and influencers, clearly the ones that they like. And Jennifer, you were writing about how there's a little media channel owned by Dr. Phil, which somehow is like getting the exclusive on these ICE immigration raids in Chicago. And it's like, again, what kind of media world are we living in now? I don't know.
Well, everybody's a journalist. If you have a camera, I suppose you know, you can be a truth teller. And so there's been such a blurring of the lines that I think that's been just a huge problem. Not that I think that everybody doesn't have a voice and people, if they, you know, want to get into this business, they should. But Dr. Phil is not a journalist. He does not do news. He does propaganda. Somewhere along the lines, he turned hard right, and he's been all in for Trump and MAGA for a while now. And he was here in Chicago the only media given access to ICE. He was broadcasting from ICE command headquarters in a very scary voice, telling us how serious and scary these raids were going to be. And it was just so ludicrous, so embarrassing. And it was all a Trump manufactured program designed to share Trump propaganda. And I don't know how many people watched it. I don't know what influence it had, but it's part of a really distressing trend in the country where, you know, Dr. Phil, I'm sure, has a decidedly different news audience than you, Pat, or mainstream media. And he's the voice there telling a story that, frankly, is not true. I can find no evidence that any of the people that he features in his piece have actually been arrested. Just to put that point on it.
That's the fragmentation again that I talk about, Mark, that, you know, a Joe Rogan, previously known for hosting Fear Factor and you know, MMA fights and things like that, has the most popular podcast. Well, therefore, he gets access to people. And that's, there's nothing wrong with access. But again, there's a difference between how journalists ask questions and some guy who suddenly got a popular talk show asks questions.
Right. And becomes, it's a backroom deal. I mean, it's a deal, you know, if you're nice to me, you'll get time with me and it'll be good for both of us. And that's not journalism. You know, I mean, there's something inherent in journalism that's kind of adversarial about public figures, where you're asking them hard questions they may not want to answer. You're bringing facts that they would maybe don't want you to, the public, to know. But none of that happens in this kind of, you know, dealing, this kind of, you know, you're my favorite person, so I'm going to give you the access. Nobody else gets it, and you'll lie for me. And that's what's going on here. And that, you know what, Pat, it just goes to show us that right wing propaganda is brilliant. I mean, they do a really good job of lying to the public. I mean, they're very good at it. And people who want to fight that need to get better.
Folks who have heard Mark and I talk previously on Fridays know that the New York Times often comes in as a bit of a punching bag, but it's one of their own making. And you point out one that definitely got my attention yesterday. After Trump's ugly news conference blaming DEI baselessly for a crash, the original New York Times headline reads, "What caused the crash into the Potomac? For Trump, it was diversity."
Right.
They fixed that later, I assume.
Well, yes. And that's a headline on the homepage. The story itself actually said that he was, you know, that he had no evidence and that he was, you know, making up stuff to try to act like, you know, women and people of color couldn't, you know, work in the aviation industry. I mean, it's just so insulting, Pat. I mean, it's like, I mean, think about, you know, back, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago, we had a lot of air crashes back when hiring policies favored white men. So, you know, so if you want to do like the DEI thing, I mean, you figure that into the equation. We've had, this is the first fatal crash in U.S. commercial aviation in about 15 or 16 years. So these DEI policies, you know, and I don't even like to call them that, diversity hiring or fair hiring is what I'd rather call them. Mm-hmm. I mean, if they were so disastrous, how come this is the first fatal commercial air crash in 15 or 16 years?
Right.
I also want to point out that 94% of the pilots in America are white men. So just so we, you know, that's a reality check.
Well, you're saying they're under attack if it's down to 94% now, right? Is certainly the way MAGA world would look at this. Jim, it raises this question about networks and, you know, these multi-million dollar settlements for suits. But I just mentioned, like, Joe Rogan and anybody else who can have a podcast. I've always kind of wondered about how more of these podcast hosts or companies, how they're not facing, you know, their own slander and libel lawsuits, because some people on podcasts say some pretty outrageous things. And I sometimes wonder, Jim, if you were like a legal advisor to some of these folks starting shows or podcasts or whatnot, you know, if you feel like they know enough about avoiding the landmines that could get you in legal hot water.
They plainly do not when they are
in these podcasts and in other forums saying things that are not only factually untrue, but they know that they're untrue, and they're advanced for exactly that purpose. As we're discussing this, all of us are thinking, of course, about another lawsuit. Remember the Dominion voting machines case involving Fox News? There was a situation where, again, millions of dollars, huge settlement, huge judgment there. Why? Because Fox News said something in its forums, affirmatively, demonstrably untrue, with the intent, obviously, to harm. And there is they're very unusual under New York Times versus Sullivan. There is the situation where, in fact, there is a basis for recovery by a private entity or a corporation out there. Not here. And that's the point. You know, beyond that, we think about the other word I'd throw out there is deterrence, right? That in part, by CBS and others settling these cases, you're not deterring anybody. You're not deterring Donald Trump from continuing to make these completely unfounded allegations, to bring these lawsuits. And a big part of the public domain in and outside of court is to stop people from doing the bad things. That regrettably now also has to include the President of the United States of America.
Who'd have thought? I've got under a minute left. So Mark and Jennifer, just really quick answers out of you. I have to admit that I was completely wrong. I said in all seriousness that I fully, after Matt Gaetz, you know, stepped down from consideration, I said, there's no way Pete Hegseth gets confirmed as defense secretary. I was wrong. You needed four Republicans to show some spine. Three of them did. So my question to you quickly is RFK Jr. and Tulsi Gabbard. Do they skate by and get confirmed as well, Mark?
I think RFK does not, and I think Gabbard does.
Jennifer?
I agree with Mark.
And that's where we are with this cabinet.
Yeah, isn't
you take,
it sad?
Take
isn't
out
it
the sad? Extremes, and the ones who should be the extremes in normal times, they just skate right through. But all right. Now, stay tuned, because next week we get this panel's bold predictions on Super Bowl. No, we don't, because I'll be gone next week. But anyway, Jennifer Scholze, Mark Jacob, Jim Santel, thank you all so much. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Always a pleasure.
When we come back, Dan Schumacher will help us talk about sports. I'm Pat Kreitlow, and you're up north.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
So Greg Bach is not here, but Dan Schumacher is. And so half of the pair that love to hear a little Grateful Dead as we wrap up the work week here on Up North News Radio. So the only instruction I gave to Luke was play Grateful Dead. And so I don't know Luke's knowledge of the library, but Dan, did he pick a good one for you?
He did. He put a good one, a good groove on a Friday morning.
All right. Very nice. Mathers is so good. He wonders why we tease him, because he's so good all the damn time. So as I mentioned just a sec ago, I'm going to be gone next Friday and then all of the following week. So I'm gone the next two Fridays. So Dan, even though we've got over a week to go, we'll talk a little Super Bowl, because there's not much else for sports to talk about in Packerland over here. But what, I mean, is it understandable that a lot of folks are like, oh, it's these two teams again, and they're nothing to get excited about? Or do you see this as, you know, potentially a very exciting football game?
I think it's going to be an exciting football game, to be honest with you. I really do. I think you got a couple of dynamic players at quarterback position, running back position. I mean, everything just kind of checks the boxes for, I think, it's going to be a better Super Bowl than it was last year. These teams know each other. I think it's going to be a good game. You know, of course, I'm biased because I'm such a football freak. But you know, I just think it's going to be a good game. I don't expect a blowout of any kind.
Do you think that Jason Kelce regrets retiring now? Because what was it, 2 years ago when he was playing against his brother the last time Philadelphia and Kansas City played?
But I was thinking the same thing, Pat.
He has since retired. Travis is still playing. Yeah. He's like, do you think he wishes he could suit up for one more game?
Yeah, I do, because at his position at center, they've had such trouble. It's the only position on the offensive line for the Eagles that's had trouble. And even in the last game, in the NFC Championship game, the center that replaced him got hurt. They had to move a guard over the center. So I got a feeling he was a little regretful that he's not got another chance to get a ring.
Luke, you looked like you were going to chime in on that too.
I don't know. He looks pretty happy with all of the different off the field adventures that he's been going on this year. So
I mean,
those have been cleaning the house.
What did they make just for the podcast? Just the podcast, wasn't it $100 million?
Something like that. Yeah.
That they're getting to do the podcast and the commercials, and his wife has had at times had the number one podcast.
I like her better than Taylor Swift.
Well, let's not compare the
two. I actually think she's better looking too.
Both, but we don't have to go there. But both brothers, clearly, they done good, shall we say, in having good overachieving women around them. Yes, that's exactly it.
So kick this coverage for sure. They both have.
That's right. Is Patrick Mahomes? I mean, is he at his peak? Is he past his peak? Is it just overexposure because we see him on every other commercial?
To be honest with you, Pat, I don't know if there's a ceiling with him. I honestly don't think there's a ceiling with him. I've never seen somebody create so many plays and have accuracy with his arm, even in a dropback situation. So I don't see where. I mean, he may. There's a chance if he keeps going, he could surpass Brady. I don't know. You know, he's not like Brady would stand back there like a statue, 6'5" and a half, and throw the ball. He moves around. He doesn't get – nobody gets a direct hit on him, you know? And, of course, the referees help him all the time.
Yeah, we do. We have seen a lot of that, unfortunately. Yep. So I did watch another football-related thing yesterday, the Pro Bowl, or what has become of the Pro Bowl. And don't get me wrong, it looks fun and everything, but again, as an older person now, it's like these guys used to play a football game, a real football game. I mean, it wasn't
real is kind of a loose term there,
but it was still a football game. It wasn't flag football, or in the case of yesterday, it was a passing competition where they're trying to hit floating targets, in a big gym, and they're running around trying to catch a ball and dive into some mats. They're wearing like these big Hulk hands as part of it to catch a football in one case, and the whole thing is like, I don't know. Is it keeping up with the times? Is it entertaining, or and I'm just being old, or is it actually a statement on what we think of sports now?
I didn't watch it, so I can't even. I did see the quarterback piece where the talking head from ESPN, Orlovsky, who's a longtime veteran quarterback, he did the passing thing for the cameras. I mean, it seemed like if you're a quarterback, it was probably a difficult task to try to hit those moving targets from 40 yards away, but you know, it's just a gimmick. I don't see it lasting two more years, Pat, to be honest with you. I don't think there's a viewership for it.
Okay. Well, there's more of the flag football game, I think, is Sunday, and then the Super Bowl after that, but we'll be gone.
Pat, let me interrupt. The biggest push the NFL has, because I was just in a meeting with NFL representatives, they are funding across the country any college and funding them for their first 3 years to sponsor women's flag football.
Oh, yeah. We're definitely going to see the growth of that. And that is a good development in this. Yep. So, all right, Dan Schumacher from Northland College, thank you so much. Have a good weekend.
Hey, Pat, have a great weekend, everybody. See you next meeting, Luke.
Yeah, there you go. Look at this.
Meeting before, but good job on the music.
Thanks, man.
See, Luke, we love you. We do. Coming up Monday morning, we'll talk about the controversy of how test scores are rated in Wisconsin schools, and we're going to connect the dots because there's some legislative neglect that plays a role in why these test scores have been trending lower. Then on Tuesday, we're going to talk live with State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Jill Underley. She is running for re-election, and there will be a primary just over 2 weeks away. So we will talk to her on Tuesday. Then on Wednesday, we will talk to one of the challengers, Jeff Wright, who is a school superintendent in Sauk Prairie, about his campaign to hope he wants to win the primary and then again on April 1st become the next state superintendent. We're still hoping to get Brittany Kinzer to commit to an interview as well, the third candidate for state superintendent of public instruction. On Thursday, we'll talk to State Senator Kristen Alfheim and new Assembly Representative Christian Phelps. They are both part of the LGBTQ caucus in the Wisconsin legislature. Thanks to you for being with us as well. Up North News is part of Courier Newsroom, a pro-democracy news network. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday morning here up north.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.